This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, Wii's recording, so I'm going to do this.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Hello, you two. 'Tis old Grey Whiskers pestering you again. Right you are. Here we go, then. Now, if your listeners don't like them there advertisements, things what keeps coming up on your chats on this newfangled sort of wireless programme, all they got to do is pay for it themselves. A couple of quid a show will keep our Lucy and our Royfield out of them there food banks what we hear so much about nowadays. So go to that there Patreon. What sounds like a load of colonials all getting uppity, but it ain't. And they'll take your cash to pay for all that there technology thingamajigs. Just think about it. A couple of quid for an hour or so of chat and chuckling to yourself. 'Tis cheaper than going to the picture palace any road.
Lucy,
mm-hmm.
Are you sure you're in fine fettle to be able to do this show? Everyone's worried.
I'm in fettle. I'm not saying it's fine, but I'm in it.
Folks, this is Dumdry Dum, the show about the reality docu drama that has centered on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the jailbreaker, that is Royfield Brown. And with me, I have the immediate speeding ticket, that is...
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of Frexit, folks, is you. Now, this week's Dumby Dum was from our Matt Stone. And I think we're going to retire it now. But that just means so much to me. Mr. Stone, I thank you. You're a genius. Mixing together Mr. Fingers with a touch of the Barwick Green. Now, Lucy,
mm-hmm.
Any one of our callers would like to send us in a Dumby Dum. How can that be done?
Oh dear.
You see.
I was all right. This is my fault, chaps, that this is also late this week. And also my computer's just gone down 3 times. So my Nurofen is now wearing off. So I was all right when we started. if you would like to sing us a Dumpty Dum or leave us a plot prediction, then call us on 0203 0313 105 or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thanks to Cosmo for his podcast roundups and for doing the Dumpty Dogs, Shambridge for her brilliant voices, Mike Hatton for his character counts, and to Derek, alone in the back bedroom. Derek has, like a lot of us, been caught out by the return of the wintry weather and said he was surprised this morning with a good 6 inches.
Oh, sorry. Well done. That kind of caught me somewhat unawares because I was actually gazing at something else, and that gag was a little bit shorter than I thought it was going to be. But it was.
What were you gazing at?
I was gazing at something on the socials. You don't need to worry a little pretty head about it. But in related dum-de-dum news, I just thought I would like to big up Mary and Christina because they're doing a Toronto meetup, Lucy, on Saturday, April the 13th. And they've got 18 people coming so far. Six coming from out of town. And one person, Josh, he was a caller-innerer a few weeks ago, is coming all the way from Philadelphia. So he's flying into Toronto to go to the Dundee Dum meetup.
Wow.
If you can get to Southern Ontario, to Toronto, and you fancy...
On a whim.
And you fancy coming along.
Or a
why
plane.
Don't you... Yeah. You're still not 100%, are you?
Not really. Carry
the
on.
Things you do for Dum-de-Dum. I hope people fully appreciate you, you know, Lucy. Anyway, why don't you contact Christina? Now, on the Twitter, she is at Saturn Express, or you can email her where she's Pink Peonies. That's Pink, P-E-O-N-I-E-S, 2013@gmail.com. So it's Pink Peonies, 2013@gmail.com, or you can text her on +1 206 595 1232. So we're meeting up in the Kensington Market neighborhood, having some pre-drinks, and we're having dinner at Trinity Common, and then we're having some after dinner drinks at Cold Tea. It's all whoop-de-doo and it's going to be lovely, and there's going to be loads of people going. So if you can get to Toronto for Saturday the 13th, why don't you come along, but tell Christina that you will be there also. Now, there's a bit in red, Lucy. This is all very exciting for people in the UK.
Dumpty Dum Live, Saturday the 11th of May at 7:30 p.m. Saturday night with us. What more could you want? You have to pay £12 for the privilege of Saturday night with us, but that is a mere trifle, surely. More entertaining than us, obviously, is the fact that you'll be having a night out with Emma Grundy. Woo-hoo. Parish councillor and Grundy wife extraordinaire, so good she did it twice. Emma, played by Emerald O'Hanrahan, is rapidly becoming a listener favourite. More entertaining than one of Bert's poems, tastier than a Brookfield lemon drizzle, and way better than Jolene at the Bull. See you there.
Last year, we did have a whole Dum-de-Dum Dum weekend. I've kind of condensed it down into a day this time. There is a BBC tour, which is going to take place at the BBC Mailbox Studios. So you can go around and see where they actually do the archers, starting at 3 o'clock on the 11th of May. Now, to book your ticket for that, you need to go onto dumdedum.com and go and hit book. And then I am organising dinner, which will take place at about 5:15. So that'll be before we do the Dum-de-Dum Live. So haven't exactly got details of that. I've got a few irons in fires with various places waiting for places to come back to me. So if you want to come to Birmingham, come to Dum-de-Dum Live. There will be other things you can do. You can go along to the BBC tour, as I said. You can book those tickets now. There's only 25 places. And I know that this morning we've already sold 5 of them already. So they've only just gone on sale now, and 5 already gone for the BBC tour. It's £15. You get to go and see where exactly they create the magic that is the Archers. And then there will be more spaces for dinner, which will be just before we do Dum-de-Dum Live. So look out for that on Twitter, on Facebook, or on our website for information about dinner. Now, one thing I will say is that the whole Dum-de-Dum Dum weekend was a great success last week. It's a bit of work to organise, folks. So that's the reason why I haven't done hotel stay. However, if you are travelling from afar and basically you say, Royfield, if you could sort out a hotel for me, I will do that. I will organise up to, let's say, 10 hotel rooms. But only email me if you're really serious about doing it. Then I will get a block booking, okay? There is nothing planned for the Sunday. It's just a case of if you just want to come up to Brum have a drink, enjoy yourself and whatever. I will do a block booking for up to 10 people, but email me if you're very serious about it, then I will do it. Okay, so that is a Dum-de-dum day, which is Saturday, May the 11th. As Lucy said, you got Dum-de-dum live details there. There is also the tour. You can go and book your tickets to go around the BBC studios, and there will be dinner. Right, and with all that out the way, on this week's episode, we hear views from James, Isabel, Stephen, Ellen, Andrew, Jean, Lucy, Andy, Monty, Mia, Nigel, and Abby. But first, before all the caller inners, it's our Lucy in a Week in Ambridge.
We began the week debating whether Freddie would want French toast or kippers for his homecoming breakfast. I say, make him feel right at home by giving him porridge in a tin tray and poke it under his door while insisting he poos in a bucket. Overprivileged little twat. The entire Archer family had their usual low-key reaction to something entirely normal. I mean, Freddie only nearly killed his cousin and sold illegal drugs, which as a result nearly shut down his mother's business. But Lily's doing telesales. Obviously, as Freddie has just emerged from jail, Kenton isn't talking to Russ, Josh is winding Alistair up like a barrel organ, Shula's having another midlife crisis, and Dave is not talking to Kenton, Jill declared this was the ideal time to get the whole family together for Mother's Day. Jill is 183 years old. When she'll give up the idea that shoving a load of people who don't get on very well together when they spread across an entire village around a cramped dining room table is going to make anything better? Her answer is always to throw food at it. Like Brian sprays 20s like a geezer when he's in the shit, Jill hurls calories about. Give it up, woman. Just because you got up at 4 a.m. to make Duchesse potatoes does not mean your family will start to like each other. The bloke from Buffy popped up again via hearsay to book his granddaughter in for a christening that the parents knew nothing about. Mr. Vicar, as Toby winningly refers to Alan, realised he may have made a bit of a boo-boo when he went round to Rickyard and found Rosie playing with an inverted cross and sitting in a pentagram on the floor. Toby, or Mr. Twat, as Alan calls him, seems strangely reluctant to commit to renouncing the devil and all of his works. Could I renounce the devil and just some of his works, Mr. Vicar? Ambridge's answer to Meghan Markle and Prince Harry are disintegrating like a veg box left out in the rain already, pleasingly. Natasha's dad was a communist, her mother was a Methodist, and her auntie Neris was the first Welsh woman on the moon or something. More interestingly, Sausage Boy has realised Natasha has a debt roughly the size of Venezuela's and a somewhat cavalier attitude to it. He discovered she has two credit cards, apparently two wedding dresses, and a shoe habit like Imelda Marcos. Oh, Tom, you didn't tell me your sister had stabbed her husband with some custard, and I forgot to tell you I had an appalling credit rating, which meant I could never have got the absolutely massive bank loan we've just taken out. Oh, this was after they trotted round to Bridge Farm like two little yappy puppies, telling everyone about their new app. I have to say they've got a bloody good app team. I've worked on apps before, and by this stage, the tech team, usually a bloke called Duncan in a Nirvana t-shirt, has only just finished scratching himself. Never mind got the graphics uploaded. I'm not going to bore anyone with the detail of putting this sort of thing together, but it takes fecking months. But still, this is Bridge Farm we're talking about, so probably it's just an A4 piece of paper they hold up that says app in crayon, and the rest is all pictures they've cut out of magazines. It'll pay for itself in no time, said Tom heroically. Has anything ever sounded more unlikely? Lily and Russ continue their somewhat combative relationship, which seems to swing between love and hate in the length of one sentence. Of course I haven't told work that my brother's just come out of prison, you idiot, Russ. Oh, a picnic, you are so lovely. Leonard, although now the owner... Leonard, although now the only voice of sanity in the loony bin that is Brookfield, cannot recognise a robin. It's in that bush, hooted Jill. What's a bush? Said Leonard. He's supposed to be painting a horse for Shula, and I'm really not sure his knowledge of the natural world is up to it. Just paint... Leonard, just paint Shula with a slightly smaller arse and no one will notice. And while we're at it, for God's sake, don't reduce him to Peppa Pig or he'll go into a nervous decline. But that's a sheep, isn't it? Isn't it? Josh had a photo shoot with Adam's tractor. That's it, love. Just look at me. Wink and let one of your tyres down. Give us a quick flash of your exhaust. There's a good girl. Love Duggal of Lovell James went round to inspect Adam's premises and said he was a bit leaky round the back, but otherwise sound. Love Duggal is a Geordie. Everyone knew has to have a regional accent now, otherwise we'd have no sodding hope of figuring out who was who. He broke it to Alistair gently that he was going to have to flog subscription packages. Get one dead horse and another one free, free rubber glove with every worm inspection, etc. And salesman of the month gets a free quick... Ugh. Get one dead horse and another one free, free rubber glove with every worm inspection, and salesman of the month gets a quick 10 minutes with the AI kit. And then we move on to Frexit. I can't believe that even Elizabeth is that unaware of her total lack of interest in her daughter, depression or no. It was a somewhat tense journey to the prison, and Elizabeth reminisced about the twins' childhood. Freddie wore the Pargeter christening gown. You wore the Archer christening gown, Lily. It had bits of silage down the front and a crisscross pattern of the milk yield figures in biro across the bottom. All of us that were hoping Freddie would have somehow learned a lesson and sound rather less irritating than before were somewhat disappointed to discover he sounded breezy as anything. Not a shade of the Shawshank Redemption about him. If only he'd had to paddle through a tunnel full of shite behind a poster of Tracy Horribin while Morgan Freeman said thoughtful things in a voiceover. But no. The same old hooray, the same old doting mother, and the same furious sibling standing by the side of the road while they drove off without her. The end.
Oh, that was a triumph this week. And considering you did it all at the last moment, you had some proper gags in there. Well done. So in between you, your dodgy chest, and you basically getting in the all together for your photographs with who took those photographs of you?
Let's not talk about that.
Oh, no. But I tell you what, dear listener, I did not get a lovely photograph of our Lucy in a Calendar Girls reprise, shall we say, with a mug. I was like, ooh, when it came to us.
There are some others coming that are sensible ones of me with the mug.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, to be a photographer. Mm-hmm. So in between all of that, you still found time to do your monologue. So I applaud you, our Lucy. I hope the good listeners appreciate everything that you do for this podcast.
I'm sure they do. Thank you very much.
I'm sure they do too. Now, normally we'd be chuntering on about things that happened in Ambridge last week, but no time for that because, as always, we've got too many calls, if such a thing can be had, but we've got it. So I'm going to do this.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
First off, it's James.
Hello, Dumpty Dummers. James here, first time caller in Ra. I'm 19 years old, and therefore potentially, as a university student, not your average Archers listener. Given I've been listening to the Archers for just over a year now, I think I'm some kind of toxic waste infected salmon in the River Am.
Oh dear. Yeah.
Thanks to Brian for that one. Yeah, just want to say, love the podcast. I started actually listening to the Archers after I was diagnosed with depression. I don't know why. It just helps me. Maybe it's a nice escape from the real world.
Hmm.
Genuine question. Where's Linda? Obviously after her pantomime success, the triumph that was the Canterbury Tales, she's disappeared. I can't help but worry that she may be writing another pantomime. This would concern me. I really can't be asked. Keep up the good work.
Oh, thank you for that, James, and welcome to the gang.
That's a good point. She hasn't been around for ages, has she?
No, she hasn't. But I must admit, I'd forgotten until he'd actually said. But it kind of shows you the kind of the somewhat cyclical nature of how some characters are actually used. You know, they have their own moments to shine and then they kind of like disappear. Mm-hmm. And of course, Linda is always the run-up to Christmas.
Yeah.
Then invariably it's the village show.
Yeah.
So she gets about a May outing, April, May, October, November, and I think maybe for good measure, the throw in September, I don't know. But yes, I hadn't thought about it, James, until you said that. But well spotted, sir.
I think Linda wouldn't start writing the panto in Easter, would she? No. I mean, I know she likes to, you know, pre-plan.
Mm.
Oh, God. That's depressed me thinking about the pantomime. Anyway, no, never mind. Let's not dwell on that.
You and I are the only two listeners of The Archers that don't like the panto. Everyone
It. Other people love it. It's weird.
We're so unrepresentative.
We are. We should probably stop doing this.
Mm. I feel like some like Remain voting MP in Parliament. You know, it's like you know, it's not the will of the people. Everybody else loves the panto. Anyway, moving on from James, it's our Isabel.
Hey, Dumpty Dum. It's Isabel here at If We Had Any Ham on the Twitters.
Mm.
I'm not phoning with a plot prediction. I'm not phoning to sing you anything. I'm phoning because I was very impressed with Russ's Adam impersonation the other week, and I've been working on mine. So, what's the time, Adam? I don't have the time. Hello, sorry, it's Isabel again. I forgot to do the admin. I'm a Hazel Woolley. So
oh dear.
You'd better play my recording, otherwise I'll threaten you vaguely with something. Or maybe I'll show you one of my grubby adult films. Ooh, I probably won't. Cheers, bye.
Now, Lucy.
Grubby adult films? What's she on about?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was about to ask you. Because when Hazel Woolley kind of was first in The Archers as Jack Woolley's nasty daughter, I wasn't around. So Jack Woolley comes into it in, I believe, like the late 70s. In the 70s anyway. So then I presume, and he comes from Birmingham, doesn't he? He's like the you know, this businessman, he's made his money in Birmingham and he travels down to Ambridge. So I presume that his daughter, Hazel, then comes in somewhat afterwards. And I remember her in the 80s, but I don't remember any storylines and I don't remember her being evil. The evil Hazel Woolley that we all know and despise, for me, is a much later kind of construct. But I just can't remember any storylines from the 80s. So you don't know anything about this video.
Isabel,
thing
you have to ring in again and tell us.
Yes. Isabel, ring in, and Cosmo, please enlighten us, please, because you know all this stuff, sir. So
sorry.
All right. So it's dodgy chest and now the sniffles.
Yep.
Right. You know, if this was like a proper show, you just would not be allowed to broadcast right now. They would just say you can't do it.
No, I would be. If I breathe heavily, I'll infect you all. I'll try and
exactly.
Put, I'll wear a mask.
Our standards are so low. We'll accept any old shit on this podcast. Wheezing, coughing.
Any limping invalid will do. That's fine. I have to say, I'm not blowing smoke here, but Isabel doesn't sound nearly old enough to have remembered Hazel Woolley being in Mucky films.
I agree with you. But the very fact that she said she was a Hazel Woolley means that she's looked back at the chronology and she knows when she came into the show. Like, and I must admit, I haven't. I don't go back that far. I'm Marjorie Antrobus. I'm like 84, 85. This is pre that. So, but she did. You do sound young as a spring lamb. So good for you. Good for you, Isabel. Now, we're going to move over to the Upper Lower East Side, but it's not our New York Nigel, it's Sheila Maggs.
Hi, Lucy and Royfield. Sheila Hello. Maggs on the Twitters, although, as you know, I'm really not on the Twitters. I've been a bit behind on my Dumpty Dum.
Oh, dear.
And so sorry that I'm late in responding to Lucy about Patrick Stewart. Yes, I do live a block over from him and see him around the neighbourhood, but I haven't chatted with him. The wine at the Norwood Club must have infected our discussion. But my partner, who's a small dog walking and boarding company, talks to everybody, has chatted with him. And she's really hoping he'll board his little poodly woodly doodly thing that he walks around the neighbourhood with. But I'm afraid we're both adherents to the New Yorker rule that you never mention, even if you're chatting to somebody famous, that they're famous and you never kind of invade their privacy in any way by stopping them or talking to them on the street. We have a few famous ones in our neighborhood. Steve Buscemi lives up from me, and we've actually had run-ins over the years with Al Sharpton and oh my God, I'm forgetting he's really famous. In any case, a number of famous people, but of course, but we've never said anything. I'd love to get Patrick Stewart over to my house, and we've been plotting and scheming about dropping off invitations to him, but none of us have ever managed to do it. So I'll bear that in mind. I'm And, you know, I'm sorry I can't be more helpful. You know, I'm kind of really over these days, the bloody Archers. I mean, they're really getting on my tit ends, a phrase I use with great choice. You know, it's such a, what we would call in the lesbian world, a heteronormative environment.
Yeah.
Everything, including our gay couple that we are so kindly allowed to have, is so heteronormative. And I know the BBC knows better. Look at Serena on Holby City. I'm turning into a Holby City fan because the Archers, you know, I'm really kind of over it. All right, but I am still listening because I can't help it. Bye.
Oh.
I was going to say, you're on the wrong bloody podcast if you've stopped listening to the Archers, Sheila. But I'm very glad that you're still listening to us.
Do you remember way back when, like early, early days of Dumdy Dum? Somebody admitted that they listened to Dum Dum and they didn't listen to the Archers.
Well, quite a few people's other halves, I think, listened to us without listening to the Archers.
But that's kind of vicarious listening to the Archers. But I'm trying to remember who this person was, and they said, don't listen to the Archers. I like this Dum Dum thing. I'll listen to that. Right. So if you are that's person bad. Or somebody who's also in that boat, please let us know, because I'm going to create an award for you or something. I don't know what that award is.
The Peculiar Use of Your Time Award, probably.
Yes. And I'll send you a T-shirt or something. So that's Sheila Maggs. Heteronormative world of Ambridge. Discuss.
Yeah, but you live in New York, Sheila. You know, 9/10 of the UK is heteronormative. And I think it is representative of what it's like in a small village, maybe. I don't know.
There is a real sense that with Adam and Ian, that they're, and I get this and I understand it, that their sexuality is a mere detail and doesn't really colour them at all in terms of not scaring the horses. So you can listen to it and say, well, they're just like us, type of thing. They are, you know.
No, they're not they're more boring than us.
Well, no, is exactly it. And we talked about this before. So actually what they have done is to say that this is a couple. They're a boringly normal couple.
Yeah.
And Ian is still in his 40s and Adam is just over 50 now. You know, I don't know anybody in their 40s as dreary as them pair. I genuinely don't. You know, they never talk about going away on holiday, having weekends away, doing fun things, et cetera, et cetera. But it appears that they are this construct of a gay couple, not to scare Middle England. So, but I kind of do agree with you, though, Lucy, that in large part, most people are boring. And so, but this is just they are even
this, I have to
more
say.
Boring, and I understand if you are part of our gay and lesbian brethren that you might say the whole thing is just reeks of let's say a 1980s kind of sitcom in terms of the dynamic between the couples, and the majority of them are heterosexual, but that is kind of the general demographic, you know, of the world. And there is a reason why, one of the reasons why there aren't many gays in the village or many people of colour in villages and stuff is because generally people like that get stifled by the conformity of village life and travel to cities.
Yeah.
So in lots of ways, this has to be a relatively accurate portrayal of, you know, the diversity or lack thereof it of an English village. And especially if you're thinking that fundamentally most people there are farmers, you're not going to have people who are second generation immigrants in any great number being farmers, because it's an inherited business, you know. So there are reasons why Ambridge is pretty white and stuff and pretty straight, and those are universal societal ones, I would say. That's, I don't know, that's off the top of my head, Sheila, so I don't know. Shall we move on to our Auntie Jean?
Actually, can I just say though about the Patrick Stewart thing? Don't give it a second thought, Sheila, it's absolutely fine. But I was listening to, as you know, I like all my old comedy, and I was listening to Bob Monkhouse talking about Tommy Cooper, And Tommy Cooper used to travel on the tube. And Bob Monkhouse said, "You can't travel on the tube. You were on the Royal Variety performance last night." And he said, "This is London. No one will say anything." And he was absolutely right. But he said, the second you go out of London and you go on the train or the bus, whatever, people stop you and say, "Can I have your autograph?" And we have the same thing here, I think, that kind of, yes, I know you're famous, you know you're famous, and we've entered into some sort of tacit pact that we're not going to acknowledge that. And when I was in New York last, Ted Danson ran past me in Central Park, and I kind of did this stifled, woo! Because I was excited and also thought, ooh, mustn't bother. So, you know, I sort of did this sort of quiver, which was a bit ridiculous, but anyway. But yeah, so we have the same thing, Sheila. So I can completely understand why you don't want to harass the poor man. Thank you very much, William.
How do you think he'd have responded if he'd heard your voice? He'd go, "Ooh, is that Lucy from Dumpty Dum?"
And then pretend yes, like I'm it. Sure that's what would happen.
All right, here's our Auntie Jean.
Hello, everyone. Auntie Jean here. Hope everyone's well in Dumpty Dum land. Bit of a late caller in her this week, but I have a few pronouncements.
Oh, good.
You would never know, would you, that Sheila's running a riding school. By the way, she wafts around the village talking to everybody and having time for life drawing classes and karate. I don't know how she does it, frankly. It must be the fact she's a saint or something. As for Nasher, if we don't discover that she has got humongous amounts of debt elsewhere that she cannot repay because that business isn't doing as well as everybody thinks it is, I should be very disappointed. I wouldn't say she's a wrong one because she seems nice enough, but she's obviously got no idea about money, and Tom is going to find out the hard way, isn't he? Mm. Well, he already is, to be fair. So we'll see what happens there. And just a quick word about Will. Everybody's down on Will. I know Mia is coping with a lot in as much as she seems to be sort of bringing Poppy up, and that's wrong. But Will, remember, has lost his wife in tragic circumstances, and I think he's still grieving. And it's difficult for him because they're girls and not boys. And he's always going to find that difficult. With Mia's period, he found it difficult, didn't know what to do. With bathing Poppy, he probably feels too awkward to do that. Now, somebody is obviously going to need to step in, but I think we ought to just be a little bit kinder to him. Because it can't be an easy situation at all, and especially since he's quite backward in his thinking as well, bless him. Anyway, I'm nearly at the end and I don't like to get cut off in my prime, so I will speak to you again soon, and I hope everybody's well. Bye-bye for now. Bye.
Bye.
Can I just start... Because it's not often I disagree with our Auntie Jean. I hold you in very high regard, Auntie Jean. But I disagree with fundamentally two things that you said. I think, though you can never put a time span on grief, this has been a year. And as Mia pointed out to Will on the anniversary of their mother's death, they're grieving too. He's not the only one. He is the grown-up, he is the adult. So I think it was this week's episode, but I'll mention it just to illustrate a point, that we know that Mia is 13 and she says, "Will, what do you want for tea tonight?" She's cooking. Mm. I'm sorry, but no, right? Mm. Like, as I said before, you can't put a length on grief, but he's the adult, he needs to step up, full stop. Mm. And then the other thing, Poppy's what, four, five, three, four, five, something like that. It's his daughter. Whether her mother is there or not, he should be able to bathe his own daughter. I've got no business with feeling funny about bathing your 3, 4, 5-year-old daughter. 10-year-old daughter? Mm. Yeah, maybe. Not at that age. Mm. So I'm sorry.
No, but that's you. We're talking about Will.
You know, it is me, and he is.
Could you imagine Ed bathing a 3-year-old girl?
Luce, I don't understand it. Full stop. Right?
Really?
I'm not. I seriously do not understand how a father cannot bathe his daughter, who is a baby, a toddler, a small child, 8 and 9. Okay, yeah, fine. right? But not at that age. I just don't understand it. Mm. And I would argue with any man that says I can't do it. It's bullshit. It's not, we're not all Jacob Rees-Mogg's and whatever.
Yeah.
And we say, oh, this is woman's work.
Yeah.
You know, the nanny or the mother does this. Crap. You know, it's 2019. You can bathe your daughter.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm just
No, I agree. But until Will has that epiphany, he needs to get a nanny or an au pair or something, doesn't he? Mind you, if it's an au pair, in the 21st century,
yeah, you'll see.
But that's not going to happen. If it's an au pair and she's coming to England to learn English, Ambridge is a terrible place to go.
Yeah, Lexi didn't last long, did she? I know she wasn't exactly an au pair, but yes, she did try.
And Auntie Jean, yes, I agree with you about Natasha, although she, you know, she does sound sort of, you know, she's not an evil psychopath. But Natasha is, to me, as I said last week about things being aspirational and, you know, she sort of epitomizes that. To me, she is that the total style over substance. It's all about how she looks, this false front of how she looks, how she portrays herself, success sells success, blah, blah, blah. You know, the impression of success sells success, blah, blah, blah. And there's absolutely nothing there to back it up. There's nothing there. You know, we don't know whether her building her business is actually doing well or not. She's trading on one award that she won. you know, lots of businesses can have a good year. It's if they're still going 6 years later. That's the sign of a good business. She's like, she, as a character, she is the epitome of why startups fail, and shows like The Apprentice and all that, where it's all about marketing, it's all about bollocks, it's all about this false front, which is a combination of kind of just blind ego and image, and there's actually nothing there. There's no, you know, when you meet people and their job description won't fit on their lapel badge, and when you say to them, what do you do, and they can't tell you, then is that sort of thing, you know? Or they describe themselves as an entrepreneur and you say, well, what have you done? And then they just start this massive story about all the things that they've started. And you think, well, what are you still doing? Oh, no, I just start things, you know? Ugh. So yes, Natasha is that, I would say.
Mm. So then she's somewhat of a perfect companion for Tom in that regard, because Tom has always been about the next new flashy idea.
Yeah, but she's a disastrous companion. As a couple, they're a total disaster. Because the one thing that Tom did have was parents that reined him in and said, you can't do that, that's batshit. And now Helen's too distracted to stop him, and he's just blindly following. He's just so desperately seeking something, Tom is. And, you know, everything is the answer. This is the answer. The definitive answer. Not, you know, this is just an option. This is something to think about. Everything is like jump in with both feet immediately. And this is it. This is going to save the world.
I don't know.
You know, how dare they talk about, you know, are we going to share our expertise with the rest of the world, you know, with this fucking app? You think, you haven't got any expertise. You haven't done it yet. You have expertise when you've been doing it for 5 years.
Goodness. You feel quite strongly about this, don't you?
Well, I do. I just it is the epitome of the modern, and I sound very old and crotchety, but this modern thing where it's style over substance. And just because you present something doesn't mean you are that thing.
One thing I would say, though, about this whole app thing, because you remember we had Drew from Tokyo. Called in, I think, about 3 weeks on the trot. And we speculated about this, and so did Drew, that the very fact that they're scaling this up, that they're going to white label it, it then does make sense as to, at least on paper, you know, it makes sense as a business, because we all said, wait on a minute, to have an app of any level of sophistication, which is going to do what they want it to do, they can't afford it, or at least it's not sustainable in terms of the amount of customers, because they're a little, you know, ragtag bobtail farm in the middle of nowhere, right? So at least they forward slash the script writers, have actually thought about this, because it made no sense. So I will give them that, Tom and Natasha, and also the script writers, because that just didn't make any sense at all. But yeah, so as somebody who's been a little bit entrepreneurial in the past, and arguably I still am doing this, I do doff my cap, though I'd like to think that there's a little bit of substance to my lack of style, Lucy. I don't want to say I'm stylish, but like, but you know, I was feeling that you're pointing your finger at me to a certain degree. All right. Good. Okay. Because though I do kind of quite agree with you, though, actually, I've always found that the importance that people put on their jobs is actually inverse to the real importance of that job. You know, doctors don't go around going, oh, yes, I saved somebody yesterday and X and Y and Z. Yeah. And there's this time and he's tricky on me and blah, blah, blah. I'm a doctor. Boom.
You know, yeah.
Whereas people who've developed some fiddly app actually say it's going to save the world.
Yeah. In about 15 years' time, once we've ironed out the glitches. Yeah.
There's a lot of what I'm doing. My little app is going to revolutionize the world and save you doing X and Y and Z. There's a lot of that over here in Silicon Valley. You know, everybody's doing something which is revolutionary.
Yeah.
Anyway, on that stunning note, it's Ellen. I believe she might be a first-time caller in her, I don't know.
Ooh. Hi, Dumpty Dum. It's Ellen, the vet from Glasgow. I think I'm a third-time caller in
her. Oh, third-time, sorry.
It's been ages since I called, but I always mean to, and then I get scared, and I never get around to it. So this week I decided to pluck up courage and call to talk about the Bridge Farm Arch. I know we spend a lot of time dissing them, mainly because they're just exceptionally irritating human beings. And as a result, sometimes we're probably a bit unfair to them. But I'm getting so angry every time Pat or Tony or Tom says, Helen seems to be very quiet at the moment, or Helen isn't herself at the moment. And then they just move on. 3 years ago, your daughter was imprisoned for stabbing her abusive husband. And as a family, they didn't notice that abuse, or they didn't know about abuse, which is understandable given Rob's skill as an abuser. But given this history, why, when Helen is notably distant from the family... she's had some kind of relationship with a new man, which admittedly Pat doesn't know the details of, but she knows it didn't work out. And just to reiterate, this is her first relationship since Helen's had since she stabbed her rapist husband.
Yeah.
Why, given that history, would you not be really concerned about Helen? I would understand if they were saying, Helen doesn't seem right and I'm worried about her, but I don't know how to approach this, or I don't know how to help her. But as far as I can see, they just keep noting that she's not right. And then either concluding it's because some cows are about to calve, or because her cheese isn't right, or just moving on altogether and going back to passively, aggressively discussing Natasha. I just find it baffling and immensely irritating that given this long history that Helen has with the mental health struggles and the terrible abuse she suffered very recently, that they're not being more proactively concerned about her. Anyway, that's all I've got to say. It's very much annoying me. Love your work. Thank you.
Mm.
Could not agree more, Ellen. Absolutely. And the thing that annoys me too is the fact that still, I know everyone says this every time there's an issue with Helen and Henry. They are having no ongoing therapy. Henry would be being watched by the school because of what's happened. They would be given a care pattern, a care pathway, and there is nothing. There is nothing. Helen is just trying to deal with it all herself, with her useless parents, you know, getting it wrong, and is repeating that pattern by, you know, rather than talking to Henry about what's happened, she's just kind of rescuing him from every single stressful situation that he finds himself in, because she's too frightened to admit the fact that he might be damaged by what's happened. It's so unlikely that, I mean, I don't think she's outright rejected all forms of therapy from her and Henry. As far as I know, it's just assumed that she was never given any options, which I don't believe for a second. I'm sure she had them in in prison. But I just don't believe, you know, that. I mean, Helen is not a moron. Even if she doesn't want therapy for herself, she would think it would be a good thing for Henry, I think.
Mm, she absolutely would. And actually, Helen being Helen, she actually would submit to therapy because she would want to talk and explore her feelings with somebody who she thought wouldn't be judging her.
Yeah.
She absolutely would. The one thing you could make a very strong argument to say that she wouldn't want to do with her mother or with somebody in the village, with Kirsty, let's say, but with a professional, Helen absolutely would. She absolutely would. So, yes, this is somewhat of a plot hole in terms of, you know, the post-traumatic care
would
of
she,
Helen
though?
And
Hang
Henry.
On, would
no,
she?
Would. She would.
She is so kind of perfectionist and everything's fine and I can handle it. I can handle it. I'm not sure she would for her. She would for Henry.
She would, Luce. She would. Mm. She would. If somebody was a professional to do with psychological and emotional care, she would entrust in that person because she would say, you are not going to judge me. You're going to help me and I can talk to you. I will be in a safe space to talk about what's happened and the way that I feel. She's been very reticent to talk about her with, oh God, what's his name? Mr. White Sheltoes?
Lee.
Lee, thank you. She's been very reticent to talk about to Lee and about Lee, though Kirsty kind of teased it out of her and Emma has worked it out. That makes complete and utter sense. She's still traumatized about the whole experience. But the way that Helen is and the way that Helen trusts professionals, I can't conceive of how a scriptwriter would say, Helen Archer would not go and see a therapist. David Archer, fair enough. Ruth Archer, right. You can go through all the characters and you can kind of guess where they would be. Helen absolutely would. I just think in that script writers meeting, they've just missed it. They've just gone, you know what? We just didn't think of this at all, because she's totally ripe and she would. She absolutely would. In my opinion. So that's Helen. How about Stephen now, Lucy? Shall we have Stephen?
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Absolutely?
Yes.
Hi, Lucy and Royfield. This is Stephen from Manchester. I'm a first-time caller in or out. I think I'm a George Grundy, because the earliest thing I can remember is Ed coming back from foreign parts with an American girlfriend and visiting Will and Emma at Casanova, and I think George had just arrived.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, what has enraged me enough to want to call you this week is Alan, because he is such a rubbish vicar. He never says or does anything to suggest he actually believes in anything. It's so rare he even mentions God or Jesus at all. But that scene this week with Shula sitting in St. Stephen's, where they talked about contemplating in the quiet or something, neither of them actually could bring themselves to use the word prayer, which is what you'd expect them to do if they actually believe in anything. And when Shula said that faith was more than just social work, Alan actually laughed, because I've been screaming that at the radio for years. And then there was that painful scene with Pitt when she told Alan she didn't know what she believed. Surely his job is to actually explain it to her or help her or sign her up for an alpha course or something. But all he basically said was that it didn't matter if she stood up in church and said things she didn't believe as long as she was nice. And then, oh, don't get me started on Mia and everything else. So, frankly, I'm appalled that Ben has got more integrity than Alan. It's a damning indictment of the church in Ambridge. That's all for now. Thanks for all you do. Bye.
Bye.
Goodness,
he's bloody right though. That was a ridiculous. Oh, hello, Basil. Basil's just wandered up the garden to join me. Hello. Yes, that was ridiculous. They're very kind of cagey about. So it's funny, they'll do it in terms of a sermon. Alan will talk about God in a sermon when we hear a part of a sermon, and it's normally, you know, at the start of a, you know, we hear it goes all echoey, and then we hear Alan saying, "We are gathered here today." Da 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 da. but they won't talk about, you know, prayer or faith or belief in God or, you know, love of God or anything like that in any of the chats that he has. And of course he would have those chats with Shula, who is extremely religious. And
well,
he seems to
she
be
goes
so...
to church, Lucy.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that is being religious, isn't it?
No, it's not the same thing at all. Shula goes to church, and how hateful was she about Usher? You know, Shula is hypocritical at best, right? She goes to church. I don't know how religious she really is, but anyway, that's just me. As you were.
Yes, there is this kind of sheepish... When he said, oh, I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you, and she said, oh, I was just, you know... I don't think the vicar would, if the vicar comes into the church, that's what he means, I think, when he says he's a crap vicar. Because when a vicar comes into the church and there's somebody sitting there in contemplation, you don't go up to them and go, all right, how are you? You know, you leave them alone. It's very, very odd. I completely agree, Stephen. Yes, I presume you are something connected with the church anyway, for you to feel quite so... annoyed about this, but yes, I agree, he's a rubbish vicar.
I kind of feel like I'm on, well, I am on the outside of this kind of conversation, but I think there's nuances all the way around it in the whole 360 of this, because at its heart I believe that the Church of England does slightly apologise about the fact that it's an organisation wrapped up in religion. It feels uncomfortable about it.
Yeah.
So for me, Alan's attitude is quite normal in that regard. It's a case of, oh, yeah, we do this thing in a church, but let's not mention the church. Yeah. And, you know,
we don't need to make a fuss, you know. It's not the be-all and end-all, you know.
and actually, what Alan is the social worker of the village. We all know it. When Nick died, he swooped in and he did his Alan thing. And he was, you know, caring and sympathetic and empathetic and all of those things. And he's seen as, and he is the conscience of the better angels and stuff. And he is an emotional guardian. So him speaking to Clary about Mia a couple of weeks ago and stuff. So he does do that. Alan always feels that he's injected into the calendar of events.
That's the thing.
That's the thing with Alan, right? So I do understand, Stephen, your frustration. But for me, questioning faith and not being dogmatic about it is actually really quite healthy.
Well, yeah, but Alan is so far away from being dogmatic. He's, you know, positively laid back in that he's deeply uncomfortable talking about God, which is a bit of a disadvantage when you're a vicar, I would say.
Well, Alan is an interesting character in that he's a man of the cloth, but he married somebody who was not of his faith. And it's one thing, you know, in the secular world, you know, you shrug your shoulders with that, wouldn't you? You say, well, so what? But if you profess to believe that him upstairs is the only, and Christianity is the only true path to salvation, et cetera, through his son who gave up his life for us, yada, 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 blah, 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 not to diminish it, but just get to the crux of it. And then
By saying yada, 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 you have slightly diminished. Skip to the end, back to life, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, okay.
But then to marry somebody who not only does not believe in that, doesn't come from that tradition, but is of another faith, even though they don't practice, has got to be unusual.
Yeah.
So I believe that Alan is some wider ecumenalist, isn't he? That he kind of really believes that all the world's religions are just different pathways to the same truth. So I hear what you're saying, but this is a wider C of E issue for me, Stephen. Anyway, you know what? There's a little bit of philosophy there, Lucy.
I was going to say, this is a wide-ranging podcast.
It isn't.
Let's hope someone lowers the tone desperately in the next call.
You know what? Andrew Horn, our hopes all rest on you then, sir.
Greetings, Earthlings. Andrew Horn here. I'm just ringing about the return of Freddy, and I understand why Lizzie's excited about him coming back. I'm sure any mum would be. I think, though, I feel also for Lily. It's so obvious that Freddy's the favoured one, always has been. And I guess there's part of the he's the heir, even though they're twins, so he has the preeminence that way in terms of the inheritance. But I think actually what drives it is more in Freddie. She sees Nigel, and that's her link to Nigel is Freddie.
Yep.
And Lily isn't. And that's tough on her. And that's a real shame, but just that's the way it is. I think that's really all I was going to say this week. So speak to you again soon. Bye.
Mm.
Spot on. She doesn't relate to Lily because Lily is so different to her. She does relate to, you know, when she was talking about Nigel, Russ, she was basically saying, my husband was thick as mince, wasn't she? You know, that's kind of ultimately what she was saying. But with huge affection, she looks at Lily, who sort of appears to be competent and successful. Admittedly, she's cocked things up a bit recently, but, you know, so she doesn't really relate to her because she doesn't feel competent and successful. But she looks at Lily, at Freddie, and thinks, yep, that's not, I know who that is, that's Nigel. And she's replaying the same, she's allowing Freddie to be the sort of the happy idiot in the way that Nigel was, because why wouldn't he be? You know, he's sorted for life anyway.
Yeah, but the key difference is that Nigel had a conscience, didn't he, in a way that Freddie doesn't. And I do think that the whole reemergence of Freddie so far has been absolutely delicious, because he seems to be Freddie more so, but on steroids. Like, he's even worse. He hasn't come back with his tail in between his legs saying, you know, I've thought about things, deep contemplation. You know, I sat in the corner of my cell for 23 hours of the day thinking of all the things I've done wrong in life.
Yeah. He's just like, rah, rah, rah. We're off to smash the oiks just like before.
Yeah. So, which I think is absolutely great, because that's what we were expecting, weren't we? You know, a denuded Freddy, so to speak.
Yeah. But
absolutely not. You know, this has not seemed to have bothered him at all. Anyway, thank you for that, Mr. Horn. Now, it is, again, the lower upper east-west side, Lucy?
I don't know. You always ask me, like I know.
All right,
find my arse with both hands. There's no point asking me.
I bet your photographer could this morning, though.
Stop it!
Oh, I did like that picture. Oh, anyway, let's talk about it off mic. Here's New York Nigel.
Hello, everyone. It's New York Nigel here with a quick word about the baptism meeting with Mr. Vicar. Now, I know Pip wants to avoid it because of the whole grace thing, so she was a bit offish about the idea of a baptism to start with, and Jill will very likely flip a flapjack when she hears about it, wondering why they haven't named her after a great gran. But Jill, as pretty as the name might be, is a bit like Nigel, to be honest, not the sort of name you'd want to bestow on today's aspiring middle-class baby. And I just wanted to make two points about faith in the Archers. Firstly, I think Toby is just a general prat. So his patronising manner with Alan is typical of his tone with everybody. Though I'd be interested to know if he calls other professionals Mr. Accountant or Mr. Doctor in the same superior way. That defensiveness around religion is typical of one of those rugby-playing chaps who end up converting and becoming a muscular, Bible-bashing evangelical Christian. And unfortunately, Christianity, like many other belief systems, doesn't automatically stop you from being a prat. I thought Alan ended up handling the interview in a very fair way, especially since he's the neighbour of everybody involved and not a vicar in a large city. Secondly, the topic of religious belief in the Archers as a gross generalisation organization seems to be very class-based. The middle classes are often religious because of convention or tradition or bourgeois mentality and morality, christening gowns, bring and buys, Schuler, for goodness sake. They can also afford to be dismissive and superior about it, but the lower classes often have a bit more conviction. Think of Clary and Bert Fry and Mia with Junior Church, etc. I'm just glad I don't have Alan's job, as I probably have bumped off a few of the characters in the first category a long time ago. That's it for this week, and happy wooden anniversary.
Oh, thank you for remembering our anniversary there, New York Nigel.
You never took me out for dinner or anything, can I just say?
Whatever, Freeman.
No flowers, no nothing.
Actually, I've sent you flowers before.
You have?
A few years ago.
Now. 3 years ago.
And I sent you a dum-de-dum mug about you two did. Months ago.
Yes.
What more do you want?
And I sent you a Superman, Iron Man, whatever it was.
Captain America.
Decal for your laptop.
Captain America, which is now on my other laptop. You need to send me that again.
Okay.
All right, awesome.
How come this conversation started off about you giving me things and now I've just agreed to send you something? How did you do that?
Because I is clever like that.
Yeah.
I thought Nigel's observation about the proles and their belief in God was an interesting one, and I hadn't thought of that.
Right, though. I mean, Clary gains genuine support, and I mean, God knows she needs it, but she, you know, support and strength from the church.
Mm. Yeah, and comfort.
Everyone else, it's just a bit of a tick box exercise. Yes, he has done that. We know the roast potatoes are done when the sermon finishes, while everyone else times it by the archers, but of course they can't do that.
You know, I think that's a little bit harsh to do with Schuler. Schuler does find something from it. It's just that she doesn't then take the tenets of what she's been told in that sermon and then live her life like that. Though Schuler, you get a real sense now she's separated that she doesn't feel as liberated not being with Alan as she thought she would. So whatever cage, whatever box she's in, it's of a construct of her own. It wasn't to do with the marriage that she's actually in. And I think it's really instructive that she doesn't apparently have any pals, does she, Schuler? Her friend is her role in the church. It is going to church. That's her comfort. And then by proxy, then it's Alan.
Yeah.
So I think that's a little bit harsh about Schuler and the church, though.
Do you know,
I
Nigel,
he's
quite a scary vicar. Don't you think Nigel is a scary vicar?
Lucy.
When he said he'd have murdered some. What?
Lucy, I said this ages ago. I don't understand how man is a vicar, right? He's so caustic about it.
He's just quite feisty about his parishioners and things.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You'd bloody cough up into the collection plate if Nigel was peering at you over the pulpit, wouldn't you? Get your Visa card out.
Yeah, I'd tithe and some more, Lucy. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But gosh, keep sending those calls, New York Nigel, because you are our fun. Right now, that's New York Nigel. And we still have some more caller inners. This is Monty.
Hello, Monty here. I just thought I'd give you a quick call about this week's episodes. First of all, it's relieving to find out that the Bridge Farmer found another bad business person to get on board. anyone who thinks that running up 15 grand's worth of credit card debt over three cards at those rates of interest obviously doesn't understand the first thing about business.
Yep.
So that's refreshing. For a minute there, I thought they were going to have somebody on board who knew what they were doing, but it's good to know it's all smoke mirrors, so we can all breathe easy again. Secondly, Alistair, poor Alistair, he's now going to have to have a sales target to adhere to, and that is definitely not up his street. It will all end in tears. I think we can all see that coming. And lastly, Ed and the sinister Tim. Tim could hardly be more sinister and unless he wore a cape and went more at the end of every line. It's clear that he's up to no good. He's obviously got some sort of gangster stuff going on. And I have a plot prediction, which is that Ed and Emma will lose the house, or come very close to losing the house at least, through some shenanigans with Tim. Probably he'll ask them to do something which is borderline illegal, if not illegal, and it will all come out. And as a result, the offer will be withdrawn. I said that I thought they were going to lose it last time I was on, or two times ago, and you poo-pooed it, but I can really see it happening. Okay, thanks, guys. Keep up the good work. Bye.
Bye. I think you're right, Monty. We have to back down. Yes. He's much too... And also, Ed's getting a little bit chippy now, in the way that he wasn't before. He always used to... It's weird. It's quite interesting. He always used to regard... Ed would always regard himself on a level with Adam or David or whatever. He wouldn't do the touching the forelock thing that...
Will
Will does, or that Bert does, or any of those people. He was always quite sort of matter of fact, practical. Yep, that's what I'll do. I'll get on with it. I'll do, you know, do a good job, blah, blah, blah. But the more he spends with Tim, the more he's identifying the gaps between him and them, and the inequalities, and therefore is becoming more, I'm not saying this is a bad thing, but because I don't trust Tim, obviously none of us do, because he's wahaha, as Monty says, then he's becoming more kind of likely to be led down a path that he can justify through some sort of class action business, rather than actually thinking, do I want to, you know, cheat Adam? Do I want to cheat? Do I want to? Because the next thing will be that he'll leave, he'll leave Home Farm, won't he? He'll leave BL and go and work for Tim full time or something, and it would just be such a shame. But you can hear it changing slightly.
Mm.
You know, he was more aggressive with Justin than he needed to be. I'm not saying Justin didn't deserve it, but it was a different Ed.
Hmm. True that. True that. I hadn't even noticed that vis-a-vis Justin. But I did think, what are they setting up with the whole Adam and Ed thing? And I didn't think of Tim at all. For me, I just thought it was a really instructive scene, in that we know that Adam is neurotic anyway. We know that.
And Adam is being really weird at the moment, isn't he?
Mm, and I just thought it was more to do with Adam than actually Ed. But the very fact that then Ed then goes and, you know, confides in others about his kind of frustrations, I should have twigged that this is actually about Ed as opposed to Adam. But I didn't make that link whilst listening. Well done, Monty. Well done, Monty.
Yes.
Lucy, it's your namesake. Guess what her name is?
Royfield.
Yes.
Hello, Royfield and Lucy. It's Lucy Jordan from the Twitters here. I started listening back when Jack was building flats for social housing and Sharon was somehow involved, having been homeless. But so that's a long time now. But anyway, Tom and Natasha. I'm wondering, is this a 21st century version of Pat and Tony? A young, independent woman with views at odds with her sporty, conservative husband. Tom and Tony are both happy in their own lanes and obsessions, tractors, sausages, and only change when pushed by said independent, intelligent young women. Anyway, just a thought. Bye.
Bye.
I think that's exactly it.
Yeah.
We did talk about this a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? That they're just the modern analogum of Pat and Tony. What's going on with your computer?
It's doing its nut. It's on its last legs, this computer. So it starts booting up and closing down and flashing and God knows what. Anyone smells burning shortly, it'll be my Mac.
When Pat and Tony were farming in the early 80s, they were somewhat revolutionary. They were organic and they were pushing the envelope, et cetera, et cetera. And other farmers and other people in the village said, viewed them as slightly wacky, didn't they? You know, they were slightly out there. And Tom has all of his ideas. Tom and Natasha have their various ideas. And I believe it's kind of exactly the same setup.
Yeah.
And they have, or at least Natasha has a very different sensibility towards money than I would guess most farmers do, because I see farmers as being somewhat conservative by nature. You know, because, you know, they're custodians. That's exactly what they do. Whereas there's somebody who is somewhat, as you would say, maybe much more fly by night. you know, but other than that, you know, and I think the other echo, I think to really tell us that they are Pat and Tony, but a 2019 version, is the fact that she's Welsh as well. I'm sure that's not by accident. You know, they're kind of thrown that in. Right, so we are rattling through the caller inners. We have Mia, and then Mia will be followed by Andy. But first, here's our Mia.
Hi, Royfield, Lucy, and all Dumpty Dum peeps worldwide. This is Mia in Newcastle, caller innering. Nasher and Sausage Boy. Genuinely can't bear the thought that I have something in common with Tom vis-a-vis clearing my credit card to zero each month. But I am on the wrong side of 50, so I guess I'm of that generation. I think Natasha, on the other hand, is in the age group that accumulated a lot of debt, maybe the free and easy type of living before the financial crash 10 years ago. She does seem very flippant about it. But I am livid that Tom made a unilateral decision to cancel the house deposit, whether or not it was the right decision. He's a married man now, God help us, and he needs to behave accordingly. Marriage is a partnership after all, and these big decisions need to be discussed together. Anyway, that's all from me. I hope to see some of you Dumpty Dummers at the Academic Archers Conference in Sheffield next week or at the Birmingham Day Together in May. Thanks, everyone. Yay. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye, Mia.
Yes, I know. I couldn't believe he'd done that. And we didn't get to hear her reaction. That was really annoying. She just sort of went, he said, and that's why I've cancelled the deposit. And then it just went, dum, 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 and I thought, what? Now I wanted to hear her going nuts. And we didn't. It's very irritating.
I was going to say new Tom, not quite a new Tom, but a different side of Tom. The fact that, you know, he had his, to use Theresa May's, a red line, and he went, no, that's it. One thing I think is a bit fascinating about this is if you look at all the socials, the Archers socials, whether it's Twitter or Facebook and the various forums, this has completely split people down the middle. And there are people that say things like, it's her money, so what? There are other people that say, well, no, it's now his worry as well. Then there are people that say he should be worried, but he shouldn't have spoken to her like that. You know, it goes on. And
there's also
on and
people
on.
Like me who say, how the bloody hell did they get a massive bank loan when she'd got 15 grand in outstanding debt? Because you have to declare it all.
That is true, Lucy. But that is very true. But then again, no, I was alone because I was just about to say that because they sat on that £1 million that or upwards
no,
of a million.
No, she kept saying.
No, it was a loan, yes. And that's the reason why she then needed her 3% or whatever, off skimming off the top of each transaction. Yeah. Yes, you're completely right. Yeah. Sympathetic bank manager. You don't have those anymore, do you?
No, we don't have a bank manager. You have an algorithm.
Yeah.
But, you know, that would have, you know, that would have come up in the conversation with the bank manager, and Tom would have known. He would have said to her, right, we need to get the figures together to present to the bank to get the loan. And she would have said, right, this is what I've got, da, 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 and they'd have got the loan between them. So there's no way they could have done it without.
It's a long time since I got a bank loan of any type, right, like 20, 30 years even, right? So take that under advisement with what I'm about to say. But if they're going to the bank and they say, we want to have this new business venture, surely the bank manager or the algorithm, whatever, is just looking at the income from their business. It's not as if they're saying, we want to have an extension on our flat, you know, which is all about, in effect, personal income. This is the business, and they're extending the business.
But when you look at your business, don't they look at your debts that you?
But that's your personal debt as opposed to business debt.
Oh, okay.
So,
oh well, maybe they're right then.
But as I said, you know, it's at least 20 years since I got
Cosmo.
Anything. Thank you, Cosmo. Please,
Cosmo.
Yeah, and yes. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, now that was Mia from. I know Mia has bought her tickets this morning for the BBC tour because I saw her name come
well
up.
Well done!
I can't wait to meet you, Mia. I'll be awesome. Now our last caller in of the day is Andy. Guess where he's from?
Denmark.
Hi, Lucy and Royfield. It's Andy from Denmark again. Now, just a quick one from last week. I genuinely have never ever heard the phrase sharing is caring, but I heard it twice within about 4 minutes in the same episode. Firstly, it was Pip who said it to Toby when she wanted to have a munch of his pasty, which I expect Lucy will be referring to in her monologue. And then
not
about 4 minutes later, it was Elizabeth said it to Russ when he was tucking into some apple pie, which I think we know where that's going, Lucy. Anyway, it was really strange, but I'd never heard it before, and I heard it twice. Now, I agree with Royfield that I think Elizabeth will crack on to Russ, because I think Russ genuinely loves Lily, and I think Elizabeth will be the one that cracked on to him, and he will turn her down, and it will make her relapse, I think, in her depression, possibly. Now, just a quick one regarding Royfield referring to christenings for people who aren't Christians. I vehemently disagree with that because I understand what you were saying, Royfield, about welcoming them into a certain community, and a lot of the reason you did it was for your own family. But I personally find it hypocritical if you're not a believer, then you shouldn't be having christenings in church. If you want to celebrate the child's birth, then just have a massive party, surely. But anyway, I'm a staunch atheist, so maybe that's where I'm coming from. Anyway, keep up the good work. The last podcast was absolute quality. Ciao.
Well, I suppose.
Can we legally adopt Andy? Is that possible at all, do you think?
I don't know what the Danish laws are about adoption, adult adoption, Lucy. I don't know. Then again,
also, it would make him a mixed race baby. So he might have a problem with that as well. I don't know.
Or be, you know, be from a blended family.
I
without wanting to repeat myself, but my family is very important to me, and my family traditions are very important to me. And that's the reason why I did what I did. Back in 2001, when Noah was christened, I wasn't a Buddhist then. And I still don't think that my Buddhism makes it verboten that I can go into a church and even sing a hymn. When I do those things, I do them because they mean something to me. You know, I did grow up going to a Methodist church, and it fills me with some level of fondness and some level of comfort. Do I believe that Jesus Christ was the absolute Son of God? No, I believe he said, when he called God his father, he said he's everyone's father, that he was a man who was a prophet and a sage, and he wasn't divine. So that's the reason why I'm not a Christian, though I believe in many tenets of Christianity and always will do. And as I said, it means a lot to my father and my mother and other people within my family. So I wouldn't break with family tradition by not having my son or daughter christened. And I don't think that makes me hypocritical because I don't read the Bible, but I'm quite conversant with it, you know. But I don't believe that Jesus was divine, and I don't believe that God is somebody who sits on a golden throne with a big white fluffy beard, you know. But I believe in many tenets of the Bible, of the good book, you know. So I can sit quite comfortably with the fact that my son put on a christening gown and has godparents. You know, so, you know, and I'm quite proud of that day, and it meant a lot to me and to my grandmother, who's now passed. And when I told her he's going to be christened in a Methodist church, she cried, you know, and she spent, you know, her last 3-4 years in the UK going to church every Sunday and doing things around the church, as a frail elderly West Indian woman, and that and so it was important for her that a grandson was. And, and maybe I'll just be cynical, Lisa, just hedging my bets, just in case there is a God. You know, I was, you know, hedging my bets with my son. I don't know. That's not the way that I'd view it, but it's almost to be cynical about it. They could say maybe that's what I did, but you know, I did it for my family.
Yes, well, I'm sorry, Andy, but sometimes Mummy and Daddy have to talk to you like that.
Oh, well done, Freeman. Do we have any emails?
Oh, there's a... we do. Voice is going now. From Christine Armstrong. This is formerly Cycling Christine, but now Gardening Christine, since we have moved near to Worcester to a bungalow with a large garden. I feel as though we are in Ambridge territory, especially as I did my first shift last week in the newly opened Community Village shop. We have very nice green tabards. Thank you for asking. So they wanted to say how much I enjoy the direction of the Tom and Natasha storyline. Truly feels like a marry in haste, repent at leisure morality tale. Apart from Tom unilaterally cancelling the flat without discussing it first, which was terrible, my sympathies were mainly with him until he started splashing the cash and eating out at Grey Gables. What an idiot. As a former accountant who likes to know where every penny of expenditure goes and who would never spend money unless I knew I could pay the bill at the end of the month, I would really struggle with finding out my other half had large credit card bills and a reckless attitude to spending. It also seemed very much that the picture of Natasha as a successful businesswoman is all facade. So now we find out she has backers and therefore the business is not all hers. How much actually belongs to her and how much profit is she actually making? Is she spending all her time going around telling people how to be successful when her business isn't, but she just has a flash car, flash clothes and creates that impression? Also, what on earth are she and Tom doing borrowing money from the bank to go it alone on their app business when Bridge Farm has hundreds of thousands of pounds looking for a productive home? This made no sense. Still, seems like a good contemporary storyline to me. Regards, Christine. Thank you, Christine. Nicely summarised there.
All right. Is that the end of the emails?
It is. We need to start winding up now because my voice is killing me.
All right, cool. All right. It's a time where I say it's advertisements time. So you'll hear some ads if you're somewhere that plays ads on a Dum-de-Dum podcast. All right, then off mic, I'm going to hit play on Millie Bell and I'm going to run downstairs because I've only got 3% left on my battery life. All right, so I'm going to disappear for a bit and have a quick wee, but I will be back.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Good day, everyone. Well, a couple of housekeeping things to deal with before I get to the social media roundup. First of all, a few of us have been having problems downloading the podcast, both the Omnibus and the ones during the week. They will often say they're downloading and then they don't. So I decided I would contact the BBC. Let me tell you, that's not a user-friendly website. I went round and round in circles for quite some time before I managed to submit anything. But I did get a lovely reply from James Curran of BBC iPlayer and BBC Sound Support Team, who said, thank you for contacting BBC Sound Support. I understand that you would like to know whether there has been an issue with the Archers podcast. I can confirm that last weekend there was an issue with the Archers Omnibus. This was quickly fixed and we have had no other reported faults with the Archers episodes. If you're still experiencing problems, can I ask how you are downloading the podcast? Which is interesting because a number of us have been having sort of fairly regular, just in the last couple of weeks, problems. So anyway, I hope they have got that fixed now, but I thought I'd better do the follow-up for all of us. And also, I just wanted to tell you about a few recommendations we've had on the Facebook page. One is from Linda Balf, who says, witty and very funny insights into life in Ambridge with a side of interesting discussion on other topics. Sometimes moving, sometimes hilarious. More of a community than simply a podcast. I thought that was so nice. Aww. Kate Lyle said that Dumpty Dum is everything, humane, kind and witty. And Andrea Melling said, a lovely group of wise and friendly people who enjoy a witty and light-hearted examination of the soap opera they love on a weekly basis. Makes me smile. I just need to take you up on that a little bit, Andrea. Where it's not a soap opera, it's a docudrama. It is real, isn't it? And now to our Facebook page. Lots and lots and lots happening on the Facebook page. Claire Asprey asked me to put up a poll asking whether Tim, when he had disappeared, was off corralling cows honest or was he robbing a bank? And we had quite a few people, 155 people who responded, and only 8 of them thought he was corralling cows honest. So nobody thinks that he is being honest at all there. And in that vein, we continued with a more general question about was Tim sitting with his feet up whilst Ed did all the work? And Leonie Beaver says, it doesn't matter as long as Eddie's paid and declares his income. My latest theory is that he'll be fined by HMRC for tax evasion. And Fiona Crawford said, I think that job was just an alibi. I presume that's why his phone was off while he was away. But will Ed lie for him if quizzed by the police? And Kay Goff said, yes, or doing another job somewhere to pocket the cash on both, then give Ed half. When asked about the cows, he forgot for a moment. Yeah, I noticed that too. And Andrea Melling said, Ed is a boxer from Animal Farm, hardworking but not very bright and easy to exploit. And Joanna Crow says he was definitely up to no good, and he wasn't. We have a post up letting us know that Emerald O'Hanrahan, who plays Emma Grundy, will be joining Lucy and Royf live in Birmingham on May the 11th. So you've got to join if you can. Oh, how much I wish I could join you all. And then the last episode with Freddie, I was just so amused because I thought that it kind of morphed from The Archers to Wind in the Willows. And I was honestly expecting Freddie to excitedly call out, pop, pop. And it knocked on the head really quickly any suggestion that Freddie has changed from his experience. And Holly Gage said, I thought exactly the same. It was Mr. Toad. Denise Ann Smallwood said, I think Elizabeth is in for a rude awakening. She wants to wrap Freddie up in a cocoon, but she won't see him for dust. And once again, poor Lily will be left to pick up the pieces. Peter Brabham said, I was really glad Freddie hadn't changed. For all his front, though, I'm sure there'll be some reflection in the long, dark tea time of the soul. And Al Williams said, it was so Toad. I hope he was wearing his driving goggles and tweed cap. Pat Rife Hanovan said, I was wishing justice once for the visual of Lily's face when Freddie hopped into the driver's seat and said, buckle up, ladies. And I'm going to give the last word to Leslie Greaves, who said, my immediate reaction as well, he'll dress up as a washerwoman to escape PC Burns next. Yes, I thought it was very, very funny. And I really did think he was going to say pop, pop. So we had a lot more discussions than that, obviously, on Facebook. We can't read them all out to you. So please come and join us if you would like to join in the discussion. And just to let you know, we have a steady about 40 to 50 people joining us a month. So we are gradually growing in our community and we encourage all of you to get involved. Next week it will be the wonderful Yokel Bear, and don't forget that Witherspoon also jumps in from time to time too, so you could be talking to any of us and you could be talking to any of you. So until the next time I speak to you in a fortnight, I say hooroo.
Ta-ra, Millie. And thank you for that as always. Lucy, shall have some Mirror headlines followed by some tweets of the week.
Yep. Right, Mirror headline is Man performs bizarre sex dance for angry pheasant while wearing G-string.
Why was the pheasant angry? Do we know? Does the article tell us?
I don't know. No, I don't. I don't read the articles. I just laugh my head off at the headlines and move on. Right. Whoops. Oh, I've now dropped my mic. Hang on. Right. Okay. Tweet of the week. Marie Anne McKee. I really hoped Freddie would return as a silent character. Esther Pickle. You didn't get the 16th century Pardita christening gown, Lily. You got the 1970s Archer polyester christening gown from the Underwood sale. Had to be let out because you were such a fat baby. That's pretty much what she said. The Cross Fox. Every 18-year-old jailbird loves daffodils. Jasper Barry. Confession. I am beginning to thoroughly dislike Rosie. I think everyone saying how wonderful she is just reminds me of Pip. It'll only be a matter of months before David praises her farming skills and Ruth says she has a way with cows. And tweet of the week is from Archer's Goddess. Say what you like about Natasha, but you have to give her credit.
Hey. Hey, well done. Well done. Well done. Right, folks, we're going to try and wrap this up rather quickly because Lucy's about to expire on us. Don't forget, if you can get yourself down to Toronto, there is a meetup on Saturday, April the 13th, starting at 4 p.m. in the Kensington Market neighbourhood. And I love Kensington. It's kind of like a scruffy Notting Hill circa 1970s with a bit of Camden thrown in. Absolutely lovely. If you want to come down and join Christina and Mary and the other 18 or so people who are flying in from all over North America to be there, you can tweet at Saturn Express, that's Christina on the Twitters, or pinkpeonies2013@gmail.com to get yourself all the details that you need to be there. And don't forget, there is Dum De Dum Live, that's Lucy and I with Emerald O'Hanneran at Birmingham Town Hall, and that is on Saturday, May the 11th at 7:30. The price of the tickets is £12. You can get them via the Birmingham Town Hall website, and if you can't Google that, so there's something wrong with you, but if you can't, just go on to dumdedum.com, follow the links. Follow the links, and you can purchase yourself some tickets.
Oh, dear.
And there will be a whole day of Archers related celebration and enjoyment. So if you would like to come up to Birmingham a little bit earlier on Saturday, maybe you can join us at the BBC Birmingham tour of the Birmingham mailbox, where you will go into the Archer studio and have some Archers related fun. Those tickets are £15. You can get those definitely from going on to dumdedum.com. So go to dumdedum.com, click on BBC Tour. There's only 25 places. So I presume that if you leave this until the weekend of this week, and this podcast coming out, it will have all gone. So it's literally first come, first serve. There will be dinner, which I will organise. I'm just waiting for a few places to come back to me and give me quotes. So dinner will be served at approximately 5:15, just before we go
on
stage.
That's not dinner, that's tea.
Whatever, right. Isn't it supper?
No, that's 9.
Food will be hot food will be served at approximately 5:15 before we go on stage and do Dum De Dum Live. And remember, I said if you need if you want to stay on in Birmingham that night, because I presume there will be drinks after Dum De Dum Live, but I'm not doing a formal thing for that. Let me know via email, and if I get to the magic number of 10 people saying that they would like me to try and sort out accommodation, I'll get a block booking. That will save us a few quid on that. Quite simply, to email me, just go on to dumdedum.com, hit contact us, and write me that email. So dumdedum.com, go, it's got a shop. People are buying things on the shop and it's wonderful. And I thank you. And I thank you, thank you, thank you. Chloe Shastri bought a Dum De Dum mug today. And so just people are buying stuff. It is great. I will put more stuff on there when I've got the time to do so. Patreon. If you want to go and support the Lucy and Royfield efforts to keep Dum De Dum, the show that we all love on the road, why don't you go to patreon.com, donate $2 per show. And then as of when we have extra special content, i.e. we speak to the actors and the people behind the scenes of The Archers, you get that, and the other tight wads that don't give us any old money, they, you know, you get that and you get something which they don't get.
This is a new technique. It rather is. Than encouraging, we're now insulting the
absolutely,
people.
Absolutely, actually. I've been doing this for 5 years. I think people know the cut of my jib by now, Lucy. Also, whilst you're at it, if you haven't done so already, why don't you go into Apple iTunes and write us a review? It's a great way of us getting new listeners onto the show, because the more reviews and the higher ratings we get, the more we are exposed and we go up those iTunes charts. So write us a review. If you think we're shite, still write it and be honest. If you think we're good, write that as well. So good. Now, remember, to get in contact with us, you can send us a message via SpeakPipe on our website, or you can call us on 0203-031-3105 to leave us a message via an ordinary phone. On Twitter, you can find Yokel Bear. He's at DumDeDum. Yokel Bear is also at Yokel Bear, by the way. Lucy is at Lucy B. Freeman. I'll say it for her because she can't talk and she's coughing in the background. I can be found at Royfield on Facebook. Simply type in DumDeDum to find Yokel Bear, Millie Bell, and Witherspoon. Lucy?
Yep.
Have you made it through the show?
Just about.
All right. You know what you need to do? Get that photographer to give your chest a good rub. Get the Vicks out, chest a good rub. Make everything feel better. All right, everybody. That's me done. All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.